From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. The Nebraska legislature is heading into day 37 of this year's session, meaning there's only 23 days left. State senators began full-day debate this week and are working through senator priority bills, but a lot remains to be seen as some major tax relief proposals and business incentive packages have hit roadblocks and stalled progress on much of what's been taken up by the legislature so far. However, you can still keep up to date and learn more about the bills impacting the issues you care about most that Nebraska Family Alliance is monitoring and working on and advocating for and against by visiting our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. There are a lot of really key pieces of legislation that we hope to see voted through the state legislature this year, including LB 814 that would prohibit the practice of dismemberment abortion on living preborn children. That bill has been prioritized by sponsor Suzanne Geist from Lincoln, and we are very hopeful that that bill will have the opportunity to pass into law this year as it should. So we're continuing to really push that bill, and we'll definitely keep people updated as the bill progresses. Certainly, it's sort of a race against the clock right now, but there's going to be a big push for that. We expect here coming up pretty soon. So if you're not already, make sure that you're signed up to receive our action alerts. You can do so at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org or like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter so that you're informed when there's going to be an opportunity to contact your state senator and ask them to vote yes on LB 814. So on today's show, we're going to compare and contrast two speeches made last week, including one from Congress, that really bears a lot of significance for faith and family values in our country. The first came from Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who at a House committee hearing last Thursday said people of faith use scripture to justify bigotry. And she then compared people who believe in God's design for marriage and sexuality to white supremacists, those who justify slavery, and those who fought against integration. We'll share those remarks and also how we should think about what was said and what religious freedom really means. And then we'll offer a contrast with what football star Benjamin Watson had to say about family values and religious freedom last week at CPAC. It's one of the best speeches that I've heard in recent memory on family values, and we're excited to get to share it. But first, as I mentioned last week, AOC at a House committee hearing on the administration's religious liberty assault on LGBTQ rights is what this hearing was titled. And at this hearing, AOC described herself as a woman of faith and then went on to disparage people, anyone who actually believes in the Bible, and grossly misinterpreted scripture to attack the president and his supporters and anyone who believes in the importance of religious freedom. This is what she said.
I'm experiencing this hearing, and I'm struggling whether I respond or launch into this question as a legislator or from the perspective of a woman of faith, because I cannot, it's very difficult to sit here and listen to arguments in the long history of this country of using scripture and weaponizing and abusing scripture to justify bigotry. White supremacists have done it. Those who justified slavery did it. Those who fought against integration did it. And we're seeing it today. And sometimes, especially in this body, I feel as though if Christ himself walked through these doors and said what he said thousands of years ago, that we should love our neighbor and our enemy, that we should welcome the stranger, fight for the least of us, that it is easier for a rich man, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to get into a kingdom of heaven. He would be maligned as a radical and rejected from these doors. And I know, and it is part of my faith, that all people are holy and all people are sacred unconditionally. And that is what makes faith sometimes, that's what prompts us to transform, because it is unconditional. It's not about that it is up to us to love parts of people. We love all people. There is nothing holy about rejecting medical care of people, no matter who they are on the grounds of what their identity is. There is nothing holy about turning someone away from a hospital. There's nothing holy about rejecting a child from a family. There's nothing holy about writing discrimination into the law. And I am tired of communities of being of faith being weaponized and being mischaracterized, because the only time religious freedom is invoked is in the name of bigotry and discrimination. I'm tired of it. My faith commands me to treat Mr. Minton as holy, because he is sacred, because his life is sacred, because you are not to be denied anything that I am entitled to, that we are equal in the eyes of the law, and we are equal in my faith in the eyes of the world. And so I just have to get that out ahead of time, because it is deeply disturbing. Not just what is happening here, but what this administration is advancing is the idea that religion and faith is about exclusion. It is not up to us. It is not up to us to deny medical care. It is up to us to feed the hungry, to clothe the poor, to protect children, and to love all people as ourselves.
So there's a lot to unpack there, clearly. But for starters, I mean, this is nitpicking and misrepresenting scripture at its finest, and very hypocritical in nature as well. And to be clear, the only thing that the presidential administration has done is to ensure that Americans aren't punished by their own government for believing in the Bible. And it's incredibly ironic that AOC, you know, it is talking about caring for children and the least of these and how holy and sacred every human life is, and simultaneously holds that position with supporting abortion up until the moment of birth. And also, we saw last week only 3 Senate Democrats vote in favor of Senator Sasse's legislation that would require medical care be given to infants who are born alive after surviving an abortion, and that they're required to receive medical care. So, I mean, talk about caring for the least of these. But this whole idea that religious freedom is about discrimination and bigotry is just fundamentally false. And what she and other House Democrats are upset about, and the reason they had this hearing, was because the presidential administration has, through a variety of government agencies, acted to protect religious freedom of those who don't want to be forced to participate in practices that would go against their beliefs. For example, ensuring that doctors who disagree with prescribing puberty blockers or opposite sex hormones or removing healthy body parts from children, as well as faith-based adoption of foster care agencies who place children in homes with a married mother and father, or further, hospitals that refuse to allow surgeries that would castrate or remove perfectly healthy organs from women who believe they are men, or vice versa. So that's what we're talking about, is ensuring that people and professionals aren't forced to do things that would violate deeply and sincerely and reasonably held religious beliefs. But AOC did get at least one thing right. Jesus was a radical. He was radical in the best way possible. And he does. Scripture does clearly command us to take care of the least of these and to love and care for orphans and widows and the poor. But what Scripture doesn't say is use the government to steal or take from one group of people and give it to the other and punish people and cost them their jobs or their licenses or fine them or put them in jail if they believe what Christ actually taught about marriage and human sexuality. She, of course, didn't mention Christ's statement in Matthew 19, where Jesus affirmed that God created humanity in his image, male and female, nor did she reference Jesus' assertion that marriage is the union of a husband and a wife. She is simply trying to use Scripture when she thinks it is convenient for her own agenda. But what we can all agree on, hopefully, is that every single person, regardless of who they are or where they came from or their religious beliefs or their political beliefs, that they are a human being created in the image of God, deserving of dignity and respect. And that's really what religious freedom is about, is allowing people the freedom to hold their own religious beliefs while reaching out with love and grace to those around them, including those with whom they disagree. And our founding fathers, of course, recognized this God-given right as so fundamental to who we are that they preserved it in the Constitution's First Amendment. The founders' understanding that religion was paramount to the health and longevity of our country, it's so central to our nation's history. In his farewell address, George Washington noted that, quote, morality is a necessary spring of popular government, and that morality cannot exist without religion. John Adams said, our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. The list of similar quotations from other founders is long and in the same sentiment as those statements. The founders all came from similar Christian traditions and recognized that those values were essential for a government that afforded its people enormous freedom. Yet throughout the country, laws are in place to restrict religious freedom, and politicians like AOC continue to seek to punish people of faith because of their beliefs. Modern-day secularists might like to try and erase religion's central role in our history, just as they'd like to drive religious viewpoints from the public square today. But they should instead see the value that religion brings and embrace the freedom of religious people to practice their faith free from government coercion. That's why at Nebraska Family Alliance, we're committed to protecting the right of every Nebraskan, regardless of their beliefs, to believe, share, and live out their faith or no faith at all, both publicly and privately. We promote policy that protects religious freedom for individuals, families, ministries, and businesses, and oppose any and all attempts to compel people to compromise their beliefs or retreat from civil and political life as the price for following their faith. And someone who really understands this and grasps the importance of religious freedom and biblical principles and family values is Benjamin Watson. He's a rising star in conservative circles, and he's also a professional football player. He plays tight end for the New England Patriots. And last week, he gave an inspiring and passionate speech about the importance of family first and what that means, and three threats that we are seeing in our country right now to the family that we need to address in our day and age. And I want to play his remarks that he gave last week at CPAC in their entirety, because they are well worth sharing. So this is Benjamin Watson last week speaking at CPAC on the importance of family first.
Family first, family first. This is a country about family first. Now, my job is to play football. That's my day job. But my real most important job is as a husband to my wife, Kirsten, of 14 years. Y'all can clap. And as a father to our 7 children. Seven. As in 1, 2, 3. Hey, with 7 kids, I got a kid for each day of the week. So I tell my kids, look, each of you have a day of the week you can talk. You can't all talk at the same time because I can't hear all of you. No, it really is an honor to be here. And on the topic of family first, you know, family is really the first form of government, of healthcare, of community, of education. It's where we as parents transfer the social capital that we have from one generation to the next. It's where we teach our children how to digest ideas and create new ones. Here's where we teach our children how to deal with conflict and how to be compassionate, kind, and loving adults. It's in the family that we teach them about our faith and about service and how to demonstrate both of those in their daily actions and interactions. The goal of all this is to raise well-rounded, confident, and capable adults who will become the moms, dads, laborers, and leaders of tomorrow's America. Whether we believe it or not, the family will always be the nucleus of civilization and the building block of society. History tells us this. So collectively, I think we have a vested interest in protecting, promoting, and praising the importance of family. Now, all that being said, I will say that the current state of the American family is a perilous one. We have out-of-wedlock births rising, we have divorce, our families are sometimes crumbling and breaking down, we see this carnage all around us. Family should always be at the center of domestic policy. We should always make decisions that supports families because that's how civilizations remain thriving. I think there are many threats to the family, but there are three threats that I want to bring to your attention that we have to address in this day and age. The first one is moral relativism. We are increasingly living in a culture where we do what seems right to us, and in the name of tolerance, no one can tell us any different. This can be seen in many of the evolving social issues that we deal with. Our morality is increasingly being tied to cultural norms instead of transcendent standards. In times like these, some would say we need to return to traditional values. I would say yes, as long as those traditional values are rooted in the soil of truth. I don't necessarily believe in quote-unquote family values, but I do believe in the biblical values that serve as the foundation on which family values stand. Some say that family values are outdated or too traditional for a changing world. To that I say, truth never changes, only people's opinion of it. I mean, this is evidenced in the act of driving down the street. You know, there are these white lines that you must stay between, and it's your choice to stay between these white lines, but if you don't, you may suffer the consequences, or all of us may suffer them as well. That's the same way with these biblical values. We have laid out for us a perfect plan for our lives, and when we decide to step out of that, which we all do from time to time, we cannot control the consequences. The second threat I would say to the family is fatherlessness. For a number of reasons, in many different communities, more than 1 in 4 children are living without a father in their home in this country. And studies, make no mistake, studies prove that these children are at greater risk of drug and alcohol abuse, mental illness, teen pregnancy, incarceration. The list goes on and on because a father is not in the house. In spite of your individual circumstances and pressures, men, our roles as fathers extend far beyond conception. And to you women, as marvelous as you are and capable as you are, you should not be parenting alone. Men, we need to be present in the home, showing our children what it means to love and to lead. We are our daughter's first love. And we are our son's first hero. Friends, the American family will continue to suffer until men, acting with courage, honesty, self-control, humility, integrity, characterize what true manhood really is. Our kids will imitate us, for good or for bad. I play football, like I said before, and I will not name the team where we were going to this stadium, but I was with the Patriots. We were going to one of our rival stadiums, and as we pulled on the bus into this stadium, I looked out the window, which is what I love to do, to see all the fans there on game day. And on the curb, I saw a father, looked like he was about my age, wasn't as handsome, though. And he was standing there giving us the salute. You know what the salute is, the one with one finger on each hand. But flanked by his sides were two children, the same age as two of my boys. They looked to be about 6 and 8. And as they imitated their father, they looked up at him as to say, "This is what we're supposed to do, Dad, right?" Men and women, your kids will imitate you. Use that imitation as a force for good. I would say the third threat that I would like to talk about to the family is the issue of abortion. I believe abortion is the most important human rights issue of our day. Nearly 1 million lives are lost yearly in this country. Human dignity begins at conception and extends all the way to the grave. What greater threat is there to the family than the legal and celebrated extermination of its most vulnerable members? This issue has become political when it should not be. Protecting life and the right to life should be bipartisan in nature. This issue of justice is dividing us in a way nothing in recent history has. And this doesn't have to be the case. Abortion impacts families on many levels. Mothers, fathers, siblings, extended family are all affected. Even now, in this room, in Maryland, at the Gaylord, some of you are quietly suffering, and you feel alienated by your family, by your peers, by your churches. This doesn't have to be. We all have value, whether we are post-abortive, whether we've never had it. It doesn't matter. We all have inherent value. Sometimes things seem hopeless, but there is hope and restoration for all these threats. With God's help, we can properly steward the gift of family that He has so graciously given us. In the year 1885, Frederick Douglass, the formerly enslaved man turned abolitionist and statesman, said this. He said, "The life of a nation is secure only while the nation is honest, truthful, and virtuous." As great as she is, America is not perfect, but her greatness is in her ability to hold honesty, truth, and virtue in high regard and work continuously and tirelessly and together to perfect them. So finally, my encouragement, friends, is simply this: to keep working. To keep working. God bless all of you. Thank you.
I just love that. It's such an important and powerful reminder of the importance and significance of family values that are based in biblical principles that have stood and will always stand the test of time. Family is the building block of all of society and civilization. Strong marriages produce strong families, which creates a healthy, free, and stable society. And we shouldn't be afraid to talk about this. Because the critical question is not, is this political? The critical question is, does God care? Because if God cares about an issue, we should care about it too. That's all the time we have for this week. Until next time, I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance, hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.